Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Hockey, basketball, soccer, football, baseball, korfball. He's got you covered in sport. Maybe not korfball, but hey, he can fake it. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Going into the NBA Finals, you know, we asked the question about, well, just how much of a national reach would the Raptors have? I mean, was it largely a 416-905 area code thing? You know, there'd be snippets in the country, places like Halifax, maybe Winnipeg and Vancouver, where basketball has a pretty good toehold. That, you know, there'd be a little bit of interest. But, man, we got to talk about these numbers. This from Sportsnet Public Relations. Game 5 of the NBA Finals reached 13.4 million Canadians. That's an average of 6.4 million viewers on Sportsnet and City TV. That makes it the most watched program ever for Rogers Media. It is, of course, the largest audience ever for an NBA game in Canada, up 1.9 million from the previous high. And this is the thing that blows me away. And think about this. The Raptors Golden State Warriors game, game 5, the 1-point win was the most watched program on TV in Canada this broadcast and calendar year. Now, we're not just talking about sports. So we're, no, this didn't just beat the Super Bowl. This was up 11% over the Big Bang Theory finale. Now, I have never watched Big Bang Theory. I'm going to put my hand up and say I've never watched it. But I know everybody else has. And I also know that it's a pretty big deal ratings-wise. Indeed, it is the biggest deal ratings-wise. Think about that. Game 5 of an NBA final beating the Big Bang Theory. In prime time, the numbers are just staggering. Audience levels were 8.5 million at 11:32, just as the game was coming down to the wire. Game 5 had a national share of 22.8% across Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1, and City TV. Look, if you exclude Olympic Games broadcasts, which are in a different level, it ranks in the top 10 most watched sports broadcasts on record and ranks as the 21st most watched overall sports broadcast on record in Canada. So I guess I've got to do a little bit of a rethink here. I was a little skeptical that there would be that much of a national reach here. And I don't know, maybe this is just a one-off. It's entirely possible this is a one-off and people understand that there's a Canadian team playing for title. I don't know if this means there's going to be more and more kids playing basketball across the country. But I'll tell you, you go on social media during a Raptors game, the pictures of the Jurassic Parks in Montreal and across the country, the anecdotal evidence, the numerical evidence. I knew the NBA Finals was a pretty big deal. Most of us knew the NBA Finals was a pretty big deal. I think we may have underestimated just how important what we're seeing right now is to the future of sports in Canada.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
Yeah, that's right. This cut goes out to all y'all that's been missing us for mad years. One love, yo.
All right, we are one sleep away from game 6 of the NBA Finals. We will have the game tomorrow. Tip off just after 9 p.m. on 680 News. We will join it in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan right after the Blue Jays-Orioles game concludes. Eric Smith and Paul Jones will, of course, have the call of the game. The Raptors a chance to win their first ever NBA title, to win the city's first championship, major North American championship since 1993. Ditto for a major sports championship by any Canadian team. You know, of course, that the Raptors lost by 1 point in Game 5. Kyle Lowry's shot failing to fall under pressure and indeed a block from Draymond Green. You know all about that. You know about Kevin Durant. You know all that. We got to talk about the impact this series has had across the country. As I said in my little intro, I expected people to be interested. You know, Canada is not going to stop being a hockey country. It's not. You know, that's kind of that's a silly argument. There is no argument worse than please love my sport. Right? There is nothing that is more frustrating, immature than people in one sport, you know, tweeting out things about another sport and how it's not as good as their sport and players aren't as tough as their sport. I mean, all that stuff. Please love my sport is just dumb. But I think you have to be completely asleep at the switch to not look at what is happening across the country as a result of this Raptors run. And not really stop and think if something deeper isn't being kindled in this country. Those numbers are staggering. Those TV numbers are staggering. And again, you know, we all know anecdotal evidence. We've all got anecdotal evidence. My mother's watching the final. She hasn't watched a basketball game in her life. And I'm not kidding. She's not watched a basketball game in her life. She's watching it. She's 94 years old, sitting at her home in Morden, and she's watching Raptors games from start to finish. Doesn't quite understand the rules. Not really impressed with the work of the referees, which we can talk about that sometime. But people are engaged in this. It's not just on this station, in this city, in this province that people are talking about the Raptors and watching the Raptors. They are, in fact, watching them across the country. Dwight Walton is an assistant basketball coach at Montreal's Concordia University. He's a former Canadian national team player. Nobody knows the ins and outs of the basketball culture in Montreal, indeed in Quebec, the way Dwight Walton does. Dwight, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Look, I saw pictures of the street party, the viewing party on Peel for Game 5, but you're out and about. You know, you're in the community. You're very much part of the Montreal basketball community, and that is one of the biggest cities in this country. Is this Raptors run making a difference? Like, is it noticeable to you that people are talking about, thinking about basketball more than they have in the past?
Yeah, Jeff, I'm so glad you're asking me this question because people at my job, on the street, they see me. Of course, at my job, they know that I was a former basketball player, and they see me on the street, and they've seen me make a couple of television hits. And they look at me and they want to talk Toronto Raptors basketball immediately. And I'm on record as saying, not only has the casual fan been brought to basketball, somebody who's never watched basketball has been brought to the party as well. And that's the beauty of this whole thing here. It's amazing how everybody has the Toronto Raptors on the tip of their tongues. They're excited. They realize the impact that a championship, what kind of magnitude of importance it will have on our country. And to bring the average fan to the table, it's been so much fun to watch. And on a local note, to see, I think the powers that be that kept Peel Street closed, because it was already closed for Grand Prix weekend.
Right,
here
for
in Montreal.
F1, right.
Yes, and to keep it closed for Game 5 of the NBA Finals because they knew what was at stake. History was on the verge of being made. And now, we were disappointed on Monday night, but because of the success of Jurassic Park here in Montreal, they plan on closing Peel Street once again and possibly Crescent Street again on Thursday night for Game 6 to have more viewing parties. So that just tells you the effect, not only across in Montreal and in Toronto, but across the country. If you watch the ABC broadcast, they are showing viewing parties around the country, Halifax, Saskatchewan, Alberta, all over the country. They are showing the effect that the Raptors run is having on our country. And if you can't be happy and overwhelmed by that, I don't know what to say to you. But this run has had a profound effect on our beautiful country here in Canada.
Yeah, and you know, Dwight, I mean, and the thing is that I think people realize when they see shots from Jurassic Park, or when, you know, they see some of the crowd shots, and this is, you know, look, advertisers are smart enough. They know this. But Dwight, that's, you know, that's the Canada I see, right? You know, I live in Hamilton. I go out and about. That's the Canada I see. You know, it's a Canada I see when I go to Winnipeg. It's a Canada I see when I go to Montreal. It's
right.
Representative of who we are. And I've got to think advertisers are looking at this and going, holy God. I mean, these are the people you want to sell whatever your product is. These are the people you've got to reach. I mean, you have no choice. You have to reach these young people because they're the consumers.
100%, Jeff. And that's the thing. And listen, we there are a lot of bandwagon jumpers onto this. And if corporate Canada wants to jump on board as well, why not? Use it to their advantage. And that's the beauty. It is about the bottom line in most cases. And if corporations want to jump on board with that, go right ahead. But this is the beauty. That's why, you know, I've tweeted that, and I don't want to take the Raptors away from Toronto, but this is indeed the Canada Raptors. There's no way around it to have just captured the minds and hearts of everybody in this country. That's the effect they've had. And you know, all I can say is if the Raptors do indeed win this championship, but I think they are going to do it, the effect is going to be even more big than we can even imagine. And I look so forward to seeing the effect it's going to have on this country, both on and off the court. It's going to have a profound effect, no question about it.
Let's talk a little bit about the game last night. You are very active in social media. I think we're on the same page with the Kawhi Leonard. You know, why didn't Kawhi take the last shot? You know, I made this point in a conversation with Paul Jones. You know, there was a video breakdown, and it was the guys on NBA TV that did it. And part of the discussion was, you know, never mind should Kawhi have taken the shot, never mind passing the ball to Kyle, but Marc Gasol is standing there wide open. And a lot of the commentators were saying, look, we understand the NBA is a peripheral game now, but my goodness, you've got Marc Gasol right there. I mean, the guy's peeled off to you know, to cover Kyle. Marc Gasol's right there. He only needed 2 points, you know, and Mark makes a jump shot or drives and maybe get a foul.
You know what, Jeff? And I'm going to give you my thoughts on that. Marc Gasol may have looked open, and yes, he definitely had a size advantage on Draymond Green. But if you watch that whole defensive sequence, Kawhi Leonard did his job. He tried to get to the basket. Andre Iguodala was playing center field. His primary guard at that point was Kyle Lowry, who ended up being open in the corner. So as Kawhi Leonard puts the ball on the floor, Andre Iguodala comes over to help. Kawhi Leonard does the right thing. He swings the ball to Fred VanVleet. Kyle Lowry swings to the corner. Now, the person I may have a little bit of an issue with is Fred VanVleet.
Okay.
He put the ball on the floor for one dribble on Sean Livingston. If he had taken another dribble towards where Marc Gasol was, Draymond Green, who was guarding Gasol at that point, had to make a decision. Either I come over and stop Fred VanVleet, which would have given Kyle Lowry even more of an open look, or if Draymond Green stays connected to Kyle Lowry in the corner, either Fred VanVleet could have made a little 12-foot jump shot off the glass or straight in, or could have dumped it into Gasol for a layup. They had enough time to get all of that done. So if there's going to be any issue on my part that I have with a player, it's Fred VanVleet. He did the initial thing by putting the ball on the floor for one dribble, but he picked it up, swung it to Kyle Lowry in the corner, enabling Draymond Green to get out there and to get two fingertips on the Kyle Lowry shot that had the potential to win the championship there. So, listen, it is what it is, whether Coach Nurse wanted to call a timeout. I'm of the opinion that I like the flow of the gameplay as opposed to calling a timeout, giving a team a chance to set up defensively. You try to get a team in flux defensively. I think it was the right call, and it's a make or miss league. We're about results here. Because Kyle Lowry missed a shot, Nick Nurse's decision is going to be questioned.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, if you look at the sequence leading up to that, I mean, Golden State was running around ragged at that point too. You know, that's the other thing. And that's, you know, I had less of an issue with not calling the timeout than I did calling the timeout earlier. But again, we don't know, maybe because there is now kind of a school of thought that, you know, that Kyle thought Kawhi was getting a little gassed and that they needed to call the timeout. I mean, that's fine. I have a little bit of an issue with that, but I'm with you, man. I had Golden State was missing shots. They were running around. Boogie's playing, you know, Boogie's playing with two screws loose. At that point, I'm just, as he normally does, at that point, I just want to keep the game going. I don't want those guys to set up. I'll take my shot. I've got Kawhi Leonard, a finals MVP, Kyle Lowry, four-time All-Star. I've got veterans out there, Marc Gasol. I let them make it up. I let them decide what they're going to do.
You know how it is, Jeff. It's you know, fans are going to have an opinion, and justifiably so. This is what makes the world great. We all have our own opinions, but we have to take it to account and give Nick Nurse credit. He knows the pulse of his players. If you go back to the timeout that he called with 3 minutes and 20 seconds to go, yes, Kawhi Leonard was on a personal 10-0 run. But I firmly believe that Nick Nurse saw not only Kawhi Leonard, but I think Kyle Lowry was gassed as well. And he wanted his two best players on the floor to have every opportunity to perform down the stretch of that game. Now, as I said earlier, it is a result-oriented business. And as a result of that timeout, the Warriors went on a 9-2 run. The Raptors only scored 2 points in those final 3 minutes of the game. So because of the loss, all of us are going to have an opinion, but I believe in Nick Nurse. He's pushed all the right buttons in these playoffs. Maybe he might have had a bad moment there because they lost game five, but there's nothing to worry about. Nick Nurse knows the pulse of his team. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be fine going forward.
What do the Raptors do now? How do they reset going into tomorrow night's going into game six, Dwight?
You know what? If I'm the Raptors, I feel pretty good. They've beaten the Warriors 5 out of 7 games this year. If you include the regular season, they've gone into Oracle 3 times this year, have won all 3 games. So I don't think they're intimidated by the environment over there in Oakland. They're going to take the initial punch. They've been great at doing that on the road. They've been a terrific road team. Kyle Lowry has been a great player on the road. I think he's going to play well again. The role players have to be better. It wasn't Fred VanVleet's finest hour on Monday night. Pascal Siakam wasn't very good as well. But they do understand the situation here. I love the demeanor of Nick Nurse, Kyle Lowry, and Kawhi Leonard. They never panic. You follow the lead of your star players and your leaders, the head coach. And when the coach seems calm and collected and cool, the players will follow suit. So again, the Raptors have had tremendous success on the road, particularly in Oakland. When the Warriors have to make 23-point shots, you outscore the Raptors 60-24 from the three-point line. The Raptors made 11 more free throws, had 13 offensive rebounds, and you lose by one. If I'm a Raptors fan today, if I'm a Raptors player, I feel pretty good going into Game 6 in Oakland on Thursday night. Just keep on doing what you're doing. Maintain defensive discipline. Take care of the basketball. That's how you control tempo, by taking good shots, not making any live ball turnovers. If you can keep that under control, the Raptors are the better team, and I feel confident that they'll win Game 6 on Thursday night.
Dwight, we appreciate you doing this, man. Should be a lot of fun, and should be a lot of fun in Montreal. Crescent Street would not be a bad place to be to watch. It's never a bad place to be in the summer. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that's right.
Take care, Dwight.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a great day. Thank you.
You too, man. That's Dwight Walton. He is the assistant basketball coach at Concordia University, former Canadian national team player. You can follow him on Twitter at BballInsider. He's a great follow. I want to remind you that we have been, of course, giving away tickets, the Raptors-Warriors series. We're continuing that, the possibility that there's a Game 7. What you've got to do is you've got to listen for the keywords at 9 a.m., 1 p.m., and 5 p.m. every weekday. and text us for your chance at lower bowl tickets to see the Raptors and Warriors in the NBA Finals. What you're going to do is text 590-590 right now with the keyword Bargnani7. That's all one word, Bargnani7. Standard message and data rates apply. Go to sportsnet.ca/590 for full details. Much discussion, of course, about Kevin Durant's injury. Not just the reaction, the immediate reaction of fans in Toronto to the injury, but to the wider questions surrounding the decision to play. Boogie Cousins, some other members of the Golden State Warriors, after the game, were very pointed in their criticism of people who kind of helped create the idea or plant the seed of the idea that Kevin Durant was somehow reluctant to play, that he was being forced to play. I mean, there were a lot of columns written in the Bay Area, anonymous sources just sort of generally stated that there was pressure inside the organization for him to play. The organization felt that he was sort of shirking his responsibility. Of course, he's got the player option for $31.5 million, possibility of free agency, all that stuff. There are so many layers to the Kevin Durant question. And, of course, in Toronto, we've got Kawhi Leonard, the guy who essentially went through kind of the same thing but for a full season with San Antonio. And, the story there was Kawhi just said, no, I'm not ready. I'm not playing. So, look, we will not know, and we will never know, I don't think, unless somebody sits down and writes a book in 4 or 5 years, everything that went into this decision. We may think we know Kevin Durant because of what we've seen of him publicly. A lot of times you don't know what makes these guys tick. I've known athletes who are tremendous competitors, and you wouldn't be able to tell it from talking to them or watching them play, but they're tremendous competitors. They wore defeat really badly. Nick Van Exel on Twitter, and I love this tweet, said, I would have played. Hell, I played in less meaningful games with some bad injuries. It's just who we are. Props to KD, Trey 5. Get well, brother. Nick Van Exel joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Nick, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Tell me about, because, we in the media and fans, we kind of imagine, we like to think we know what goes on in a guy's head. But I just don't think we really understand the decisions a professional athlete has to make in these situations, do we?
No, I mean, because if we all were professional athletes, every person on this earth, we're all going to have a competitive spirit, and it's that it's just going to be ridiculous, and we're always going to sit back and be like, man, I can't believe I did this 20 years from now. I can't believe I did that 20 years from now. But going out there and playing and being with your teammates and, helping them trying to win a championship, I don't see many players not going out there trying to sacrifice themselves for that opportunity.
Nick, they'll say that there's a difference between playing hurt and playing injured. What for you was the line when you played?
I don't even think I had a line. I was just crazy. I mean, I literally, my senior year in college, I had a knee surgery. I had a knee surgery Thursday or Friday, and I was playing that next Friday, 1 week after a meniscus tear. When I was playing in Dallas, I had a knee surgery, came back in 16 days. Normally those are 4 to 6 weeks. I came back in 16 days. So the next year, I had got traded to Golden State in that summer, and something popped in my knee again. And this was during training camp, just running sprints. And I had to get knee surgery in. So I'm thinking to myself, well, I came back in 16 days last year when I was in Dallas. So I'm going to try to push myself and do it again. And I was doing it. Me and Chris Mullins, who was working with the Warriors at the time and GM function. Him and Gary St. James, me and Chris Mullins would literally be in the gym. He would be working me out, and I'm just trying to get through it, trying to get through it. Long story short, my knee was never the same after that surgery because I rushed that one, and that was the one that kind of, you know, ended my career.
Mm-hmm.
So we would do some things because we don't want to feel like we're letting our teammates down, we're letting fans down. And, you know, probably it's not the right thing. Now, what I will do as a former person who's been through a lot of injuries and come back, you know, trying to sacrifice for others, basically, I would tell players nowadays, man, you better not come back unless you're 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, it's your body, and you don't get the credit that you really deserve and for coming back early, for fighting through pain and things like that you really deserve, and it's really for nothing. Is you're not getting anything extra. People are really not gonna pat you on the back because you go out there and play horrible. All they're gonna remember is you playing horrible. They're not gonna be talking about, you know, you're playing through injury, you're playing through pain. They're not gonna remember things like that. So you got to kind of, you know, be your own man at the same time, but know the consequences of making that decision and going back out there and playing.
Now, Nick, you're an assistant coach with the Memphis Grizzlies the past couple of years. I mean, you've coached against Kevin. You know Kevin a little bit. It's funny listening to Bob Myers and Steve Kerr both yesterday talking about Kevin Durant. And, you know, there's been so much drama around him with the Golden State Warriors, and I don't know how much of it is true and how much of it is just, you know, team wins so much that, you know, after a while people start looking for problems, right? And if you can't find too many on the court, you start looking off the court, and stuff that's probably not that big a deal, all of a sudden it becomes a big deal. You know KD, what would have been going through his mind when the decision had to be made? Because he has to have he has to be the guy ultimately that says, yeah, I'm ready to go.
Right. So here's what I would, you know, kind of tell fans that, you know, if we're injured, right? So what we will probably get is you probably can't hurt it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go out there and play and it won't hurt. You won't get hurt yourself anymore. There's no more risk to it. And you can get the other side to where if you go out there and play, that you can really, you know, tear this tendon up. You can really, you know, rupture it. You can really mess it up bad, you know. So hopefully KD got both of those, you know, opinions, whether it's from the team doctor or another doctor. Hopefully he got both of those. And then at the end of the day, it's going to be the player's decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, you know, I probably would have gotten both of those from the doctor, saying if you play on it, there's a possibility you can tear your Achilles. And there's a, you know, he may have said, you can't hurt it anymore. Now, it's going to be up to me.
Right.
If I want to go out there and play. And I know my dumb butt, I would have went out there and played. That's just me, though. And I played with some players who milked pinky fingernail injuries for a long time. So, you know, it goes both ways.
Right. What was the closest you came to having a doctor or a trainer talk you out of playing? Was there a time where you just kind of said, all right, I'll go with the dude this time?
Man, I, you know, when we played, you know, it wasn't like the 80s and 70s, of course, but we still had our own, mm-hmm. you know, we can make up our own decision. Now it's like, well, you're tired because of these things on your back. It's telling you you're tired, so you need to rest.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm sitting around now, you know, and I love these guys. I, you know, talk to them every day and have great times with them. But, you know, I sit around and just listen, and it's like they put these things, you know, in their practice jerseys and all this, and it's telling them, you know, their heart rate is telling them their workload, I should say, their workload. And so they're seeing that if a person is tired or not, if he ran too much in practice or ran too much in the game. And, you know, they sit players out and they tell players, well, you need a rest day today, so you have to sit out and rest. I don't recall having a rest day, like as far as
load management.
You know, yes, I don't recall having that as far as somebody else telling me that.
Yeah.
Now, I may go to the coach and be like, Coach, I'm beat today. And they'd be like, okay, because they understand it. They understand it. Coaches understand it. But for somebody to tell me that, and then as a player, I just accept that, that's different. And I don't think I've ever had, you know, a trainer really say that, Nick, you probably shouldn't play, because they knew I was going to play. I was playing in Denver, and Jason Kidd, he was guarding me right in front of our bench. And my Achilles, not my Achilles, but my plantar fasciitis had been bothering me a little bit past few weeks. And it just popped. It was so loud. It was like a loud pop. And Jason Kidd was like, you all right? And I just hopped, like literally on one leg, all the way to the locker room. So I go in the locker room. Trainer comes in. He tapes it up a little bit more. And long story short, I see Dr. Trainer, who was our team, the team doctor. He's like, Nick, you basically already did the surgery for this thing by popping it. You know, it won't get any, you know, dead serious. It won't get any worse. So for the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, I was just walking around in a boot. Mm-hmm. I didn't miss any games, but it was hurting like hell. But he told me that I wouldn't injure it anymore. You know, it wouldn't be any worse. So I just walked around with a boot for about 3 or 4 weeks, kept playing, didn't miss any games. But, you know, looking back at it, I was like, man, that was crazy.
Hey, Nick, what are you making of this final series? What are you making of it? And you know, it seems to have been, you know, it looks like when it's done, if the Raptors win, Kawhi is probably going to be the playoff MVP. Has Kawhi answered whatever questions anybody may have had about him?
I really don't know what kind of questions they had about him, to be
right.
honest with you. I mean, he's already proven himself. You know, like I said earlier, some guys, when they're hurt, they know their body, and they won't risk it. That's all Kawhi did in San Antonio. We can't get upset with him, you know, for that. I mean, you could be sitting at the desk right now with a stomach ache, and nobody knows it but you. Nobody knows how we really feel. We can be diagnosed with something, but, you know, nobody knows how we really feel. Kawhi is a machine. You know, we played him in the playoffs in Memphis, and I didn't see a drop of sweat. And I didn't even see him breathe heavy.
Yeah.
I'm like, what in the hell is this dude made of? And he just come to Toronto, and they did a good job with, you know, with his load management. He accepted it, and it paid off for him. He's been awesome, man. It's been awesome to see that, you know, Toronto, you know, getting to the finals for the first time. You know, that city, that country has always been great every time I've been there. So, you know, it's good to see that.
Nick, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this, man. Thanks so much. Good to talk to you. Be well.
No problem. Thanks. Yeah.
Take care. That's Nick Van Exel. Nick the Quick, assistant coach with the Memphis Grizzlies. Don't know if he's with Memphis again this year. But that's right. Memphis named a new head coach. Thank you, Travis. So, Nick... one of the true characters in the NBA. Still remember, Nick was the guy that would stand like 100 feet back of the line when he shot free throws, right? Wasn't he the guy who like took a step back? I think he was. He was the guy who took a step back shooting free throws or something. It was bizarre. He's also, in case you haven't noticed, he does have a reputation for being one of the better storytellers in the league. So that's a good get by Travis McKenzie. Nick Van Exel on social media. I love that tweet. I would have played hell I played in less meaningful games with some bad injuries. It's just who we are. Props to KD Trey 5. Get well, brother. And it's interesting hearing former players and how they approach the story surrounding Kevin Durant and the decision to play. It's kind of, I think in a lot of ways, it's been an eye-opener and a lesson for a lot of people. It's just kind of reinforced the notion that it really is a business decision on the part of these guys. And by extension, it can also be kind of a life decision as well. It's not simply, I got to get back on the court to help my team. There's a lot at work on it. And I still love the New York Daily News headline yesterday, the front page of the New York Daily News, Knicks lose game 5, which was spectacular because the Knicks are operating under the assumption they will have Kevin Durant next year. We'll take a break and we come back. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. The Stanley Cup will be awarded tonight. Blues and Bruins, Game 7, 8 o'clock on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Ren LaVar, NHL insider, joins us. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is not to dwell on the negative. It's more to illustrate what's at stake. You said in Media Day, Brad, that the loss in 13 stuck with you, and you look back on that more than the win. Why is that? Is that just because the investment you make and you come so close, you don't want to let it slip away?
Yeah, you realize when you get to this point how hard it actually is. You know, and especially the longer you've been around the league, you look at some guys that have been around for a long time and how few opportunities you get. You know, it's extremely difficult to get this point. You need everything to go your way. You need the calls. You need the bounces. You need guys to be healthy and guys to step up at the right time all the way through the year. So it's extremely tough to get just to this point here, and to win is even harder than that. And once you lose, you realize how close it is. You get a taste, but you don't get that victory. You don't get to feel all the sensations of winning. And it's extremely difficult. And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way it goes. Someone has to win, someone has to lose. And, you know, it's the best thing in the world for the team that wins, and it sucks for the team that loses. And being on both sides of it, you know, you realize how hard it is and just how it is to lose. And so that sticks with you forever. When you're winning and losing, it sticks with you forever. And, you know, you don't forget everything that happens when you win, and you definitely don't forget what happens when you lose. So, you know, again, unfortunately, there's going to be both sides of that tomorrow, and see how it plays out.
All right, this is a pretty significant day in the history of Boston sports. It was 35 years ago today that Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics beat Magic Johnson and the Lakers in the NBA Finals, the 1984 NBA Finals. That, of course, was in a Game 7. It was the last Game 7 of the championship series held in Boston tonight. The Bruins and the St. Louis Blues will meet in the Stanley Cup Final, Game 7, the 28th all-time Game 7 for the Bruins, their first as hosts in the Stanley Cup Final. St. Louis is playing its 18th all-time Game 7. It's their 11th road Game 7. And only the Maple Leafs and Canadiens have played more Game 7 as visitors. Ren Lavoie is our NHL insider with TVA Sports and the Journal de Montréal. Ren Lavoie joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ren, thank you so much for joining us tonight. All right, Game 7. Simple question. Give me two reasons the Bruins are going to win, two reasons the Blues are going to win.
Okay, that starts with the Blues. It's because they're playing on the road, right? They feel good about themselves when they're on the road. And Jordan Binnington is going to be one player that's going to be that needs to be on top of his game. And if he wants to win his first Stanley Cup, he needs to I'm not sure if a shutout is necessary, but he can't allow more than two goals. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I think he is actually the only reason why they're here today. You look at his maybe his average, his save percentage in the Stanley Cup final, it's not great, okay? But that being said, when he's winning games, you know, he's always the best player on the ice for the St. Louis Blues. So he's going to be the reason why they'll win the Stanley Cup tonight. If not, on the Bruins side, you know, I was hearing Brad Marchand, what he was saying, what we just heard, actually. I remember 2013 versus the Blackhawks. The problem, and it's unfair maybe, but the problem was Tuukka Rask. He allowed two quick goals at the end of Game 6. That game was, in the back pocket for the Boston Bruins. They were going in Chicago for Game 7. And Tuukka Rask just collapsed at the end of the game. Maybe not only him, but he didn't make those key saves, okay? Mm-hmm. But look at Tuukka today. Tuukka Rask arguably could be named the MVP even if the Blues win that game tonight. So I think Tuukka is at another level. And the maybe the other reason I do believe is home ice advantage, because you know, you look at the way the playoffs are right now, it always feels like the visiting team has the advantage. But that being said, for Game 7, Stanley Cup Final, you want to play that game at home. And Bruce Cassidy yesterday was crystal clear about that. You're going to feel better about yourself. Family is going to be around you, which is maybe a distraction at one point. But if you're playing with your kids, if your routine is as usual instead of going in your hotel room, I don't know. I do believe, like, with the experience that they have, the Boston Bruins will win the Stanley Cup tonight.
What explains the difference in Tuukka Rask this year compared to previous years? And I don't know. Look, I don't know if it'll ever be enough for Boston fans to completely fall in love with Tuukka Rask, but what explains the difference this year, the reliability compared to previous years? Or have we just been too hard on him, Rand?
I don't think fans were too hard, because Jeff, when you know exactly what a player can bring to you, and he's not bringing, you know, that level of play, obviously people are going to be upset from time to time, honestly. So I think there's only one reason. But first of all, he didn't play much. We talked about that a lot during the playoffs, you and I. That's, I think, really good for him. But second of all, I think Tuukka realized that he was not really a fan favorite. And I think he believed in a way that he had another level in him. So he really simplified the way he's playing the game, okay? He's more square. He's not moving from left to right for no reason. He's never out of the blue paint. Look at it. Never out of the blue paint. And he's square. So I do believe that he's bringing a lot of, I'm going to say, energy for his teammates, because he's making those key saves. But at the same time, he's so relaxed. I mean, he's never panicking. He's always the same. He's got. I didn't see him having a different kind of attitude for a morning skate or a skate before, the day before the game, or on game day, or during a game. He's always the same. He was rattled a couple of times though with a couple of Blues players in his face, especially last game. David Perron, there was a reaction by him at the end of the first period. But that being said, you know what? He's focused, and he's one of the big reasons why the Boston Bruins are here today.
Jordan Binnington, if he wins today, it'll be his eighth win after a loss in the playoffs this year. That is ties Ron Hextall and I think Mika Kiprusoff and Nikolai Habibulin. What is it about Jordan Binnington, Wren, that you've been able to determine that makes him, you know, one of those guys who is capable of almost single-handedly stopping a losing streak? It's got to be more than simply a short memory.
For sure. What surprised me is the way that he could really be rattled during the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even last game, at one point during there was a penalty on a Boston Bruins player, and he decided to make a huge turnaround to be involved close to the penalty box with a Bruins player, even if it was on purpose, or he's going to say to us it was on purpose, it was not. He's really involved in games, like, emotionally. But, Jeff, let's be honest here, okay? I think Jordan deserves tons of credits. But at the same time, look at the decoder. This is a really good defensive core. And it's tough to go around him, around Binnington. He's not – what I don't really like about his game is when he's making a save, a lot of times there's some big bounce or rebound, or the puck is really around him. But key is the Bruins are – for them, it's sometimes really tough to get those bounce. And – the defensive core is doing a hell of a job, but if there's you know, a second scoring chances, probably there's a good chance that Binnington's going to make that save too. So when he's dialed in, he's dialed in. When he's not, though, you see in his game that it's he's still thinking a lot about what's the next step, what's the next save, something that Tukarask is not doing. He's young. Somebody came to me and said, don't say that he's young. He's 25. Well, I don't care. he's young when you look at, you know, his experience in the league. I mean, it's not even close when you look at Tukarask's experience in the league. So, in my mind, he is a rookie, but he can do something that no other rookie did ever, is to win 16 games in the playoffs as a goaltender. That could be his chance tonight. Will it? And if it happens, I mean, I can't wait to see who's going to win the Conn Smythe if the St. Louis Blues win the Stanley Cup tonight.
Well, we've seen rookie goaltenders do well in Stanley Cup finals before, haven't we? It's been a storyline. Ren, thanks so much for doing this, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and enjoy basketball tomorrow, my friend, too.
Thank you. We'll be talking. Take care. That's Ren Lavoie. He's our NHL insider with TVS Sports and the Journal de Montréal. Again, Blues and Bruins, the game, the deciding game tonight. Puck drop just after 8 o'clock on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Hockey Central's pregame at 7:30. McLean Kiprios, Rudy Friedman. Coach's Corner with Don Cherry, of course, as always in the first intermission. And it'll be done. The Stanley Cup Finals, National Hockey League will declare a champion tonight. I really want to see the Blues. I really want to see the Blues win the Stanley Cup. But, you know, the hockey fan in me, the sports fan in me, wants the St. Louis Blues to win the Stanley Cup. The sports observer who has an appreciation for organizations that are able to keep their window of opportunity open for a long period of time would not be completely disappointed if the Boston Bruins won. It's odd, but I don't think the Bruins are an organization that gets as much respect as they deserve. I think in some ways they may be one of the most misunderstood organizations in the National Hockey League. So it's kind of there's sort of two emotional hitching posts, if you want to call that, at work in this series. This much I do know, Game 7 starts tonight at 8 o'clock, and sometime around probably 10:30, 11 o'clock, 11:30, we'll have a Stanley Cup champion. The Raptors and Golden State Warriors have today off. They will, of course, play Game 6 tomorrow in Oakland. We will have the game. Tip-off is just after 9 o'clock on 680 News. It'll be joined in progress right after the Blue Jays and Orioles on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ben Rohrbach, is an NBA writer with Yahoo Sports. The Kevin Durant injury, the talking point yesterday. Lots of implications for the NBA offseason, in addition to, obviously, the finals. But lots of implications for the NBA offseason. Kevin Durant was kind of the big domino of the offseason. Now that that domino may be removed from the board as a result of injury, the question is, how does it impact the offseason? Who is the next big domino? Ben Rohrbach will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Breaking up your morning with a big brain of Blair. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Talked about in the past about how I'm not a big fan of the NBA's late game report or last 2 minute report. I don't understand what reason it serves. You know, I'm in the media business, so transparency is generally good, especially when it has, as long as it doesn't have anything to do with anything that involves me, transparency is great. But the NBA has announced or sent out a release that Marc Gasol should have been given a couple of free throws with 49 seconds left. It was a... You remember the drive into Marcus Cousins? Of course, it would be Boogie Cousins. Boogie Cousins fouled him. And the NBA said in its last two-minute report and issued it Tuesday, Gasol got the shot off and fell to the floor. It didn't go in. No foul was called. It was 106-103 at the time. Now, a couple of things about this. We've talked a lot in this show about the whole idea of the predestined play, right? In sports, every play builds off the previous play. So if you change something significant with the previous play, there is no guarantee that things are going to work out accordingly, right? I mean, Marc Gasol can make both those shots, and the entire, you know, the entire sequence of the game has changed. And who knows, if Golden State wins by three instead of one. I mean, we just can't say, well, if Gasol made those shots, then that would become an automatic 1-point Raptors win because they lost by one and 2 points. It doesn't work that way. Things aren't that predetermined. But I just don't get the point behind this. I don't see whose benefit is served by this. You know, the referees missed a call. Okay. Probably one of about 30 in the game. It's one of the things the NBA does that I just, I don't think it serves anybody's purpose. Ben Rohrbach is an NBA writer with Yahoo Sports. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ben, I don't want to go on and on about this. I want to talk to you about the impact of Kevin Durant's injury, not just in this series, but in the offseason. But this does puzzle me. It gives us something to talk about. It gives the media something to write about. But what the hell's the point of the last two-minute report? It's not like you can replay the game. If anything, people are just going to get more pissed off at the officials. I don't see the reason for this. Can you maybe explain why this is a thing?
Yeah. I mean, their explanation would be that it's about transparency, and I think the league has actually come out and said they'd prefer to do it for the entire game. I understand your point, and I agree that each call sort of leads to seven other things, and by narrowing it down to the last 2 minutes, you're missing everything else that led up to that point. So there could have been, you know, as you said, 15 other incorrect calls that could have changed the game one way or another. And it sort of just creates this argument after the fact that is sort of pointless, right?
Yeah, that's the thing that stands out to me. It's like nobody feels better about it.
right.
You know, exactly. Nobody feels better. The referees don't feel better. Marc Gasol sure as hell doesn't feel better. And if the Raptors go on to lose a series, somebody's going to point out, well, I mean, come on. You know, game five, remember game five, that call? It's right there in black and white. The referees screwed the Raptors. Anyhow, I was just, it's just something that I was thinking about this morning that particularly got in my grill. Not having Kevin Durant for the rest of the series, obviously it has an impact on this particular series. But Ben, can you tell me a little bit about some of the dominoes that will not fall or may fall in a different order now in the offseason? Because this has not only changed the complexion of this series, I think it certainly changed the complexion of game five, but it's kind of throwing the offseason wide open, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it could have massive ramifications, especially if, as everyone seems to fear, that it's a torn Achilles and he could miss all of next season, which would give him an awfully big choice. Because do you shop around to see if you can get, if someone will still give you a max contract, knowing that you're going to miss that first season of the deal? And or does he say, well, I'll just pick up this option. I'll stay in Golden State where I'm comfortable, rehab there, and not move to a new place and have to answer all these questions for a year about sitting out. So in a weird way, it sort of like impacts the Knicks as much as it does the Warriors or anyone else who believes that they could get him. And then that affects so many more people because, you know, most people who were chasing him in the summer, all those, the big market teams were opening up two spots to pair somebody with him. And then does somebody want to go to a team where Kevin Durant is going to miss the first year and essentially be out of contention for one more year of a 4-year deal? It creates so many complicated things that will have ripple effects throughout all of free agency.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One thing I was thinking with the Knicks, and I guess it comes down to, and first of all, if I'm Kevin Durant, I may be inclined now to take $31 million, but or $31.5 million. But I'm also looking at it from another point of view. I mean, if I'm a team like the Knicks, if I have some degree of certainty about Kevin Durant, look, I'm going to have to pay somebody next year. I'm going to have to get to the floor. So as long as Kevin Durant doesn't want, you know, if I can get Kevin Durant to maybe agree to a 3-year deal or something like that, or a 4-year deal, then maybe I sign him and just suck up that first year, you know, and just say, yeah, we got Kevin Durant. We're paying him. He's not playing this year, but we got him for 2 or 3 years after that. Like, you got to spend the money somehow.
Yeah, for them, I mean, they're so desperate to be relevant that I think that would make sense. I was emailing with a couple of people around the league yesterday and just saying, hey, do you think a team would still give him the max? And it sounds like the people do believe that the Knicks would still do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would make more sense for them than someone like the Clippers, who are already a playoff team, and one more guy would sort of put them into another level of contention. You know, if would you say, all right, I guess the Durant doesn't make as much sense for us now, and somebody like Jimmy Butler would make us good next year,
right?
Immediately, that would be a question that they would have to ask themselves. But for someone like the Knicks or the Nets or somebody like that, sure, yeah. I mean, get him there. It'll be a big splash when you sign him. Everyone will be talking about you for a year up until he makes his debut, and then you have him and hope that he's, you know, 95% of what he is now or what he was before this injury.
Hey, Ben, what's your read on the Kawhi Leonard market? I mean, most people seem to think it's the Clippers or the Raptors, but I'm wondering how many teams may be more inclined now to at least talk to Kawhi after seeing him this year and in these playoffs, knowing that he's, you know, he is reasonably healthy, or at least he's appearing as if he's reasonably healthy. I'm just wondering how many teams may be interested in him now that would have been a little lukewarm, even let's say halfway through the year. Can you see a bigger market now as a result of the fact that not just what he's done, but the fact that he's showing he can maintain health for the most part through a regular season?
Yeah, and that was sort of another thing with this Durant injury, is that another sort of ripple effect is that it opens up the door to so many teams that think, okay, the Warriors aren't going to have Durant next year, and the title is there to chase. So going after somebody like Kawhi, I mean, obviously anybody would sort of want Kawhi. It's a matter of selling him on it, and as you said, it seems like Toronto or his hometown LA, or I guess some people have speculated about New York and his uncle's ties. It all seems so strange with Kawhi because you never really know what he's thinking. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure there will be a huge market of people wanting him, but probably only a few teams that would be able to sell him on it.
How did you view the decision to play Kevin from a distance? You know, and again, we won't know exactly who all the ABCs of it and all the logistics of it, but you know, it was pretty clear from Bob Myers' commentary that you know, obviously it was a I really got the impression it was a decision that wasn't easy to make, and that there was a certain amount, even though he didn't want to admit it, there was a certain amount of second guessing involved on the part of Bob Myers and the Golden State Warriors. But how did you see that? Were you surprised that Kevin played?
I mean, yeah, now after the fact I am, but for the first, 12 minutes or whatever, 15 minutes of the game, you're thinking, wow, this guy looks pretty great, and mm-hmm. he's going to change this series. So it's really hard. But my whole thing is, like, as long as the doctors made him aware that risk was significant as it seems, and he went in knowing that something like that could happen, then that's, that's his decision, and everyone came to that decision together. But if they sort of couched it and they didn't make it seem like that was as, I don't want to say likely, but as obviously possible as it was, then that, I feel like that's a big issue,
Yeah.
But they didn't make him that aware of it. You can go back and forth on it all day, but as long as he knew the risks and everybody signed off on it, I think it's okay that he played. Obviously it stinks that it's horrible that he injured himself that way. But if you know the risks and you go into it knowing that and you come out with that result, it's just, no one's really to blame. And mm-hmm. it's horrible.
Ben, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Take care. That's Ben Rohrbach. He's an NBA writer with Yahoo Sports. And again, just to give you a rundown, Game 6 of the NBA Finals will go Thursday. Tip-off will be just after 9 p.m. on 680 News. It will be joined in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan immediately following the Blue Jays and Orioles. And The Wrap, our post-game show presented by Comda.com with Josh Goldberg and Matt Marchese, will be right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So again, 9 o'clock tip-off and 680 News Thursday, joined in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Wrap, our pregame show with Goldberg and Marchese, right after the final horn in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I want to remind you that we are running our Raptors Warriors ticket giveaway promotion. We've been asking you to listen for the keywords at 9 a.m., 1 p.m., and 5 p.m. every weekday, and text us for your chance at lower bowl tickets to see the Raptors and Warriors in the NBA Finals. Obviously, if there's a Game 7, text 590-590 right now with the keyword Bargnani 7. B-A-R-G-N-A-N-I 7. That's all one word. That's just one word. Bargnani and the number 7. Standard message and data rates apply. Go to sportsnet.ca/590 for full details. The Toronto Blue Jays lost 4-2 to the Baltimore Orioles last night. It was another one of those games. But a little bit of intrigue surrounding the team in a good way this time, at least from what we've been able to determine. Shai Davidi reporting on Blue Jays Central that Bo Bichette, who is, of course, part of the holy trinity of rookies for the Toronto Blue Jays, Bo Bichette, ready to be promoted to AAA. He, of course, broke his hand, got hit by a pitch, broke his hand. He's been rehabbing. That's not really, that's great news. It's not really the big news, though, and I was a little surprised by this yesterday. Shai Davidi reporting that Bo Bichette, very close to being promoted to AAA, but that his stay in AAA may not be that long, that he, in fact, could be up here very quickly. Ben Wagner, on last night's broadcast of the game, going a little further, suggesting Bo Bichette in the majors could be a matter of days as opposed to weeks. This surprises me. I had operated under the assumption this year that there was a slight chance Bo Bichette would be called up in September. I don't think service time is that big an issue with Bo Bichette compared to Vladdy. First of all, I think there was a sense that Bo Bichette was so far ahead in spring training that in a perfect world, he would have made the team out of spring training. I also think that there's a suggestion that by the time Bo Bichette is ready to earn big money, the collective bargaining agreement, and the same thing for Vladdy, the collective bargaining agreement is going to be changed. And perhaps the whole issue of service time and who's a free agent when may not be, it's not as much of an issue now from a mathematical point of view for the Blue Jays as it's been in the past. I think there's a real sense that something will happen with the new CBA that will make it okay for teams to bring up younger players faster. And at any rate, the suggestion, so I went from thinking that there was a chance Bo Bichette to be called up in September, although understanding there was also a likelihood that he wouldn't be called up and that we wouldn't see him to spring training, to thinking that maybe we would see him before September if the team was in contention, which it clearly isn't going to be. Now it's beginning to sound almost like we could see him before the All-Star game, which I did not see coming. And I don't know how I feel about it. To me, it might be an indication that the Blue Jays think their rebuild is even farther behind. And that, you know what? Quite frankly, the team's not going to be any better at the start of next season than it is now. Might as well get him up here. It's a suggestion that perhaps the rebuild hasn't advanced as fastly, as quickly as the Blue Jays wanted it to. So you know what? We're going to have to get Bo Bichette up here at the start of next year anyhow. Let's get him up now. Let's get him acclimated. I also wonder, quite frankly, how much pressure there is on the Blue Jays to give their fan base and to give the TV network something. Because right now, there are nights where it's a difficult product to sell to people. And the cover provided by the NBA Finals is about, well, it could be 48 hours away from disappearing. Shai Davidi is our MLB insider at Sportsnet. Shai Davidi is with the team in Baltimore. He'll join us. Scott Crawford is director of operations with the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Jason Bay Gordash going into the Hall of Fame, being inducted into the Hall of Fame this weekend in St. Mary's. Scott Crawford will join us to talk about that. Got half an hour of baseball talk. Then Alvin Williams joins us. A little bit of baseball, lots of hoops. Don't go anywhere. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good show, good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Pitching hasn't been great, but neither have the bats necessarily. But could there be some relief coming in the near future from a young, exciting bat?
Yeah, there very well could be. And Bo Bichette is getting close to activation at AAA Buffalo. He's been on rehab from that broken hand at Single A Dunedin. We expect him to join the Bisons later this week, probably Thursday or so. And at that point, it really is going to start the clock on him coming up to the big leagues. It's really going to be determined by how quickly he gets his legs underneath them. Blue Jays will obviously want to make sure that he's strong physically, got a good physical base, but also that he's hitting and performing. And as soon as they checks all those boxes, I would expect that we would see Bo Bichette up here. At the start of the season, I'm not certain that we would have felt that same way. But at this point, the way things have gone, the way Bo Bichette has progressed, the Blue Jays probably will give him a chance at some point this year.
All right, that was Shai Davidi talking to Sean McKenzie last night ahead of the Jays' 4-2 loss to the Baltimore Orioles. Not much to talk about out of that game. Trent Thornton, okay. Jays still unable to string hits together. Another misplay involving Eric Sogard. And I shouldn't say another misplay involving Eric Sogard. That's not fair. Another misplay, comma, this one involving Eric Sogard and Randall Grichuk, comma, occurred as well. Like I said, not much going on. Or, man, there was a time, Shai Davidi, our MLB insider at Sportsnet, remember those glory days when the Orioles and Jays hated each other and they were throwing balls at each other and Jose Bautista was flexing and yapping and I miss Buck Showalter. I'm pining for Buck Showalter. Well, not really, but you know what I mean. There's not much happening when those teams meet anymore, is there? Hello, Shy?
Hey, what's going on?
There you are. How are you, Shy? I just said there's not much happening when those teams meet anymore, is there?
No, I was really struck by that last night. And, you know, I was just thinking back. I think there's only about five or six players left from the 16 wildcard team from both teams in the dugouts last night. And it's really stark just how much they've changed. And, yeah, that rivalry was electric. You know, they were in a sense, they were almost mirror images of each other from a lineup construction perspective. You know, a lot of guys who are just going to try to hit the ball in the ballpark. Lots of power. You know, they wanted to win games 10-8 and oftentimes did. And each team had its own sort of, you know, personality. Buck Showalter obviously had the I invented baseball, we're the experts of everything kind of thing going on about them. And, you know, the Blue Jays had their own swag and energy. It was a lot of emotion and made for a really fun mix.
I remember those days. I remember those days where there was no shortage of talking points. You created a little bit of a ripple yesterday, though, and our friend Ben Wagner on the broadcast kind of doubled down on it a bit and said he thought it might just be, again, you know, depending on hoping for good health for Bo Bichette, but he kind of doubled down and said, hey, you know, it might just be a matter of days as opposed to weeks for Bo Bichette to be up with the Blue Jays. And I heard what you and Sean said, and I'm with you. That shocks the hell out of me. And I don't know if it's necessarily shocking in a good way. How did we get to the point where we could see Bo Bichette? Let's just say, for argument's sake, Shy, we'll see Bo Bichette sometime before the All-Star break. Because that's something I did not see coming. How did we get there?
Yeah, I didn't expect that either. And really, coming into the season, my guess would have been that the Blue Jays would try to stagger the potential free agencies of Bichette and Guerrero by not having Bo debut until, you know, 3 weeks into next year. But, you know, to his credit, you know, Bo Bichette has forced this and was forcing this with his play and his development and his growth up until the broken hand really stalled his season. And his growth specifically from the defensive end, you know, it's that is something that, you know, isn't going to get talked about because people always look at offensive numbers. But in just discussing it with people who've seen him on a regular basis, he went from a guy who was probably going to end up at second base or maybe third base to someone who potentially could have a real impact as a defender at shortstop. And not a lot of people really expected that. You know, Bo Bichette has put in a ton of work to get there. Especially last year, I remember going to AA a couple times to visit the Fisher Cats and, you know, coming to the ballpark at 1 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game. And there he is on the field doing extra work before the extra work that he did before the games. And it was really impressive to watch. And then how we got here, I mean, look, the Blue Jays have to see what they've got in their kids. You know, they've got to start figuring this out. Because certainly what they've got going on right now isn't working very well. And ultimately, if you're going to take your lumps, take it with the kids who will at least get something out of this development opportunity as they try to build towards the future.
Yeah, you know, the only thing that I keep thinking, and I agree with you fundamentally in that regard, I think the Jays are almost at a point where they don't have a choice. And I'm not certain that's how I want my prize prospects coming up. Like, you know, one of the things Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro talked about a great deal was wanting to ensure that the environment was right when they brought these kids up. And, you know, we know that Charlie has talked about how, you know, Tampa Bay last year, how they kind of let these young guys take over, you know, take control of the clubhouse, you know, with the help of veterans like Kevin Kiermaier. We've kind of seen that storyline emerge in the last weekend with that talk that Charlie had with Kevin Biggio and Danny Jansen about not being afraid to be leaders. But my goodness, this is hardly a positive environment to toss these kids into right now.
Yeah, but, I mean, what are you going to wait for, right?
Like, I guess,
how is it going to turn?
Well, and my point was,
if you don't get more talent in there.
Yeah, and I talked myself into this a little earlier today when I was thinking about this. You know, this may be a sign that the Blue Jays think the rebuild is not, it hasn't gone as quickly, or it doesn't look like it's going to go as quickly as they want it to. And they may decide, you know what, quite frankly, we're not going to be that much better next year. If we're going to bring, it's not like we're going to be bringing Bo Bichette into a perfect environment next year. Let's get him up here now and work with the major league coaches and get him and Jansen and Biggio and Vladdy comfortable, just kind of taking control of the clubhouse. Because God knows if they trade Stroman and or Sanchez or both of them shy, I don't have to tell you, there is a gaping leadership vacuum in there. I mean, right now there's a gaping leadership vacuum. But if those guys go, there's a gaping innings vacuum, a gaping experience vacuum. It's just a vacuum in general.
Yeah, and look, to me, the fundamental issue is the vacuum of talent, right?
Yep.
It starts with talent. And when you get your talent, leadership emerges from talent. Most of the time, a team's leaders are only going to be as good as the players around them. And right now there's a talent deficiency on this roster. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And you also have like some talented young players who are going through the inevitable growing pains that you have with players transitioning to the big league level. And, Danny Jansen is, a prime example of that, but certainly not the only one. And so the only way you're ultimately going to get better and really develop the next generation of leaders is by having better players on the roster. And, Bo Bichette, without a doubt, upgrades the talent on the roster rather significantly. And if you're thinking about what this team's going to be for the future and how you want it to grow and develop and build its own culture and its own leadership, that leadership core of the future has to be Bichette, Guerrero, and Kevin Biggio, and Danny Jansen, and once he's back and healthy, Ryan Borucki. I mean, that's the guts of this team for the future. That's who you want front and center. So, at some point, you're going to have to get there with these guys. And, you can continue to spin your wheels with, the Eric Sogards of the world, or you can start giving some playing time to the guys who are ultimately going to get you where you hope to go.
Is there a sense, Shai, on your part, that a lot of the impetus for this is coming from Charlie and the coaching staff?
I don't think it's solely them, but look, there's no doubt, Charlie's experience last year with the Rays, as you mentioned earlier, it was very much, it's like, let's ride or die with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately that's who you're basing your future on.
They had a rookie infield. They had an entire infield of rookies for 30 games last year in Tampa.
Yeah. And look, if you're building with those guys and they're going to be your foundation, it gets to the point where, you can do some developmental things at the AAA level and you're away from the spotlight and you don't have the pressure. But sometimes you need the big leagues to show you what you don't know as well, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to get into the environment and figure it out from there. Because, look, one way or the other, the stakes, this is essentially just a development year at the big league level. And it's not like this is a typical year where the results are expected. I mean, they're playing, what is it, 350, 370 baseball right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like they're going to make it worse.
Right.
So, give them a chance to try and make it better. I mean, that's the way I'm going to go. And because so much of this year is just trying to sift through all the different pieces and saying, we believe in player A, but maybe player B is going to emerge and player B is going to be the better guy. And,
right.
and trying to figure out all those permutations and casting forward what this team's going to be.
Meanwhile, this is a story that I know you've talked about. We've talked about it amongst us. I know you and Ben have written about it as well. But, one of the positives for me this year, well, there are a couple of positives. One, Trent Thornton, just the fact that he's kept it together has been a positive. But also the fact that I think we have an idea of what Lourdes Gurriel is now, don't we? I mean, I think they've found a spot for him. and you can move. You can just move forward from here. I know there are still games where he takes his routes to the ball aren't that good, but Shaw, his body language. He's a different looking guy than he was when he went down to AAA. He just is.
Right, and it was pretty interesting in chatting about him with Charlie Montoya yesterday, and Montoya noted something from the weekend. And I didn't really pick up on it, but there was a fly ball catch that he made left field, and he just had a little kind of really relaxed motion when he caught it. He caught it in sort of a, not in a flashy way, but in sort of there was a nonchalance to it that really spoke to his comfort in the field. And we never really saw him be that way in the infield. And he's generally been a pretty cool kid, a pretty level-headed and even keeled kid, but he just looks so much different and so much more at ease in the outfield that, you know, you've taken that away from him, and you know, maybe that lets the bat translate. And he certainly wouldn't be the first player to, you know, struggle in the field and then carry that to the plate. You know, you saw that with Edwin Encarnacion and how moving him across the diamond from third to first really allowed him to become a much more confident and at-ease player. And so, yeah, so it certainly seems like left field is going to be the place for him. You know, there's some talk that maybe they would look at him and try to see if he'd play in center at some point. But, you know, he's got a spot right now. In a pinch, he can move into the infield if you need it because he's got that experience under his belt. And now it's up to him and to make the most of his skills at the plate, because if he wants to stay in left field longer term, it's not going to be the defense that keeps him there. It's going to be the bat.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely the key to me with him is finding a place where he's comfortable enough that bat is going to, that it's going to allow the bat to play, because the bat is the most, that is the most important part of his game. And you know, it's you kind of close your eyes a bit, and you can sort of see the development of this team, even if it hasn't come as fast as some people might want it to. You can kind of see the development of this team, position by position, taking place. And you know, I think the it's good that at least now we're having a discussion about being able to identify a spot for Lourdes Gurriel Jr., saying you could probably play him there, because we didn't know at the start of the season, right? When he was in the infield, we didn't know if he was going to be an everyday infielder.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays were really hoping that he would take to second base and it would become a comfortable spot for him. It didn't. And, you know, among the issues, you know, the Blue Jays pitchers get killed a fair bit, and in some cases, deservedly so. But it's not like they have this plus defense behind them that's just gobbling up balls everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a lot of spots where you've got either a defender who's out of place, a defender who's learning a new position, or some guys who aren't known for their defense. And that's pretty leaky, too. So, you know, removing him from a spot where, again, he just didn't take to it, didn't have that comfort and ease and consistency to somewhere where he's making the plays that he needs to make. I mean, that's helpful in a number of different ways.
Shai, we're going to let you run. Enjoy Charm City.
I will do my best.
You're going to have a little crab cake action today?
I tell you, the ballpark is still, it's all these years later, it still holds up. It's as beautiful as ever. Unfortunately, the games on the field aren't quite as pretty right now, but it's still a great spot to watch some baseball.
No, it absolutely is. It's a great spot to watch baseball, and it's a great spot to work baseball. Thanks so much, Shai. Take care.
Yeah, have a good one.
All right. Shai Davidi, our MLB insider in Sportsnet. And again, we'll have Game 2 of the Orioles and Jays series, 7 o'clock tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan of Sportsnet won the Orioles, beating the Jays 4-2 yesterday. But the story yesterday, the continued advancement of Bo Bichette, and he's getting close, folks. And there will be a time before the All-Star game where you are going to see Bo Bichette and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Kevin Biggio and Vladdy Guerrero Jr. in the lineup at the same time. It is obviously a big week. Could be a tremendous weekend for basketball in this country. It's also a significant weekend for baseball, as the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame inducts four new members. Jason Bay, Ryan Dempster, whose speech will be the highlight of knowing Ryan's sense of humor, knowing his ability to imitate voices. I'm sure it'll be the highlight of the event in St. Mary's. Rob Thompson of Sarnia, Ontario, and Gord Ash, longtime baseball executive, former Toronto Blue Jays general manager, all of those gentlemen being inducted in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame June 15th in St. Mary's, Ontario. They've also got time, apparently, to put some old fart in into the Hall of Fame as the Jack Graney Award winner. Scott Crawford is director of operations with the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. It sounds like people are having fun wherever you are.
Jeff, we're in the middle of setting up for the big day, so it's quite exciting.
Tell us a little bit about what people can expect at the Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame this weekend. And I, for people who don't know, yes, I am going in as the Jack Graney Award winner, and I'm very pleased and very proud to be doing that. But
well, first off, I got to thank you and congratulate you, Jeff. You are the Jack Graney Award winner, and we're pretty honored to be presenting you that award on Saturday. But it's a full day of baseball. I mean, it's there's ball games on the fields all day, starting at 10 a.m. The museum's open, which is newly renovated and expanded. The the induction ceremony is at 1 o'clock, and then of course an autograph session with the inductees after. So it's a full day of baseball.
You've also got an event on Thursday night at it's called the Opening Pitch at Left Field Brewery, which is the meet and greet with the 2019 inductees, plus, Fergie Jenkins, Paul Beeston, Don McDougall, Hazel May is going to be there, Murray Cook. And this is a fundraiser, but it's also sold out. So this has been, this sounds like it sounds like the relaunch and everything is something you guys have really put a lot of thought in, that's something you're really happy about. And it looks as if it's kind of, it's given a little bit of boost to the Hall of Fame, hasn't it?
It has, and we're pretty excited about partnering with Left Field Brewery and having the event at their place Thursday night, and sort of a kickoff event. We always try to do a fun kickoff event in Toronto for the inductees to help spread the word about the Hall of Fame, and it's really great. Ryan and Jason, those guys are all looking forward to it, to meet and greet some fans and have a fun evening.
How did you get involved in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I've been here a long time, right out of school. I started volunteering here back in 1999, believe it or not, and then got employed in 2000 and still sticking around. So we're pretty excited. Not too many jobs in baseball in Canada, so this is one of the best.
What are some of the memorable stories, the things you remember from inductions, the speeches and things of that nature? Is there a particular one? Particular induction, a particular ceremony, a particular event that really stands out to you as being especially meaningful?
There's a couple, actually. One is when Tom Hankey was here in 2011, we all know him as the Terminator and a great Blue Jay closer, but he was so down to earth and such a nice guy. He rented a bus for for a busload of people from his hometown to come up for his ceremony, and he was asking us, what can he do to help us on his big weekend? And that's kind of, not supposed to happen because it's their weekend. We're supposed mm-hmm. to be doing everything for them. But the Terminator was one of the great inductees.
It's interesting. We're having this discussion, of course, against the backdrop of the Toronto Raptors run to the NBA Finals. And one of the things Canada Baseball has done is it really has provided a template, I think, for how you not just exist and survive, but thrive in the shadow of hockey in this country. And there are a lot of things we're seeing Canada basketball do now that have kind of adopted some of the things that Canada baseball has done. There's kind of a kinship, isn't there, between baseball and basketball in this country, like two sports that have been in the shadows of hockey, but have really established footholds. And I think basketball might be a little behind baseball in that regard. It might be catching up, but it is kind of interesting. There's that sort of twin dynamic at work there, isn't there?
There is. I mean, obviously hockey in Canada, we all know how big and popular that is. I mean, baseball and basketball, we're both pretty darn good, but I mean, we're in Canada. Our baseball team is double Pan Am gold champion medals. Our women's team's right there too, winning the silver. And now, with basketball, and obviously the Raptors doing very well the last couple of years, It's going to help them too, just like when baseball took off when the Blue Jays had their surgeons a couple years ago. And the important thing is that our kids are playing sports, right? I mean, obviously we want more kids playing baseball, but I'm one of those things where as long as the kids are playing a sport and having a good time and playing multiple sports, that's definitely a good thing for their growth.
Scott, we're going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this. Again, thanks so much. I will see you on Thursday, and I will certainly see you Saturday. Thanks again.
Sounds great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Be well. That's Scott Crawford. He's director of operations of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Induction day is Saturday. The museum is open to the public from 11:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. For the regular admission fees. And, of course, during the day, there'll be a variety of current honorees, past honorees in attendance, sort of a who's who of baseball in Canada. They've got a golf tournament on Friday. We mentioned Jason Bay, Ryan Dempster, Rob Thompson, and Gord Ash going into the Hall of Fame. Don't know Rob that well, actually. Know Jason fairly well. Know Ryan, of course, know Gord extremely well. So it is going to be a great day Saturday. If you're in the neighborhood, please drop by. There'll be a ton of former players there, as I said. And the other thing that's kind of cool is there will be baseball games going on all day, induction day, including Ontario Nationals games at 10 a.m., 12:30 p.m., 3 p.m., 5:30 p.m. There'll be kids games as well going on at the Rotary Field, King Field, and the Cement Field in and around St. Mary's. It's a great place. It's a lovely location. If you have a chance, get out there. Alvin Williams is Sportsnet's basketball central analyst. He is in Oakland ahead of game 6 between the Warriors and the Toronto Raptors, which is tomorrow night. Again, we'll have the game in 680 News starting at 9, joining it in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan right after the Jays and Orioles. Alvin Williams will join us. Got an hour of hoops ahead. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Three things you're not supposed to talk about in polite company: politics, religion, and money. Better add sports too. And since he's not always polite company, he'll maybe address all four. Jeff Blair and the Jeff Blair Show. Now. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
White shirt, now red, my bloody nose sleeping. You're on your tippy toes creeping around like no one knows. Think you're so criminal. Bruises on both my knees for you. Don't say thank you. Oh, please, I do what I want when I'm wanting to. My soul, so cynical. So you're a tough guy, like you really rough guy.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm that bad type, make you keeps, sad type, make who is that you just played? Okay, that's the. Did you tell? Did you know about Billie Eilish? You know the discussion in the office yesterday with Dylan Brown, producer of the, or not producer. He is a technical director of Primetime Sports. He went to the concert last night, and I was kind of busting his balls a little bit, just a shade. Well, first of all, I thought it was Billy Idol, and I was saying, why the hell would you go see Billy Idol? He goes, no, it's Billie Eilish. But this guy, she's got a ton of sound effects in her songs and everything. Anyhow, does that help my street cred by playing Billie Eilish? It helps your street cred, Derek. Thank you. Anyhow, I honest to God did think he said Billy Idol. You know, my age, that, I mean, it was a natural, right? Anyhow, anybody named Billy. Hey, by the way, we have a pair of baseball tickets for you. It is Walk-Off Wednesday. Baseball Central, by the way, returns once the Raptors win the NBA Finals. So we'll be back next week at some time. But it is walk-off Wednesday. Every Wednesday this baseball season, we're giving you a chance to win a pair of Blue Jays tickets as part of the walk-off Wednesday contest. Today, we have a pair of tickets to see Shohei Ohtani, Albert Pujols, and the Los Angeles Angels when they face the Jays on Monday night, which, by the way, is also the Sportsnet Jays Care broadcast auction presented by TD. Every Wednesday, we will give out a player name on Baseball Central, but we're doing it now because this is normally when Baseball Central is. Later on in the show, we'll give you the cue to call, and you need to give us the name we announce right now in order to win. This week's Blue Jay is Ken Giles. If you want to win the Blue Jays tickets, call us when we give the cue to call at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Tell us the player's name, and if you get it correct, you'll walk off with the tickets. You can go to sportsnet.ca/590 for more info. Game 6 of the NBA Finals is tomorrow night. Tip-off is at 9 on 680 News. We will join the game in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan after the Blue Jays and Orioles finish their game. Alvin Williams is our Basketball Central analyst on Sportsnet, and Alvin Williams joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Alvin, thanks for doing this. Congratulations, by the way. The recognition during Game 5 I thought was kind of cool. It was neat seeing you and Vince on the court again at the same time. I thought it was really well done.
Thanks a lot, man. It was a lot of fun seeing you know, always seeing your former teammates, especially seeing Vince. I haven't seen him in a while, and I just remember Vince being there, and you know, some of the ups and downs with the fans and everything, and you get that ovation. It was great to see.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Tracy McGrady was at the game and sitting behind us last night, or the last game, and it's kind of neat seeing a lot of loose ends, I think, being tied as a result of this. So what does Nick Nurse do today with the Raptors? How do the Raptors approach Game 6? Because, Alvin, look, I think, quite frankly, the Raptors starting five, if KD's not in the lineup, the Raptors starting five is better than Golden State starting five. Like, I don't know if Nick has to do anything at all going into this game.
Yeah, I mean, I just have your team ready to play. You know, just have your team mentally prepared to go, you know, making sure they execute at a high level, playing smart basketball. You know, everyone play the way they have been playing, because once again, the Warriors are a great team, but as you mentioned, I think the Raptors are just better. So I don't think he needs to do much other than have his team ready to go and ready to play, especially be ready on the road.
Now, with KD out of the lineup, and as I said, they've played the Warriors all but one quarter essentially of this series without KD. But with KD out of the lineup, what do you think, if you were Steve Kerr, how do you approach how you go about using your bench without KD? Like, do you start Boogie or do you keep him on the bench? And you know, because, you know, if you save yourself 2 or 3 minutes with him, you probably saved yourself 2 fouls. How do you go about, how do you think Steve Kerr will go about starting the game, and how do you think he'll go about using that bench? Because he's going to need tag team effort from Quinn Cook and Boogie. I think if they're going to win, the two of them somehow are going to have to team up and have good games for both of them if they've got a shot at winning.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, anytime you're at this level, you're going to need, you know, I mean, your team collectively to step up. And, you know, Quinn Cook has made some big shots during the game. I think it was game two. He made big shots. Even last game, he made a big three. So he's a guy that you can't let loose. You can't let him go and get those open looks, because he can shoot. And, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, he's going to give you what he can give you. I think it's going to be up and down for him because of his rust and, you know, his health and things like that. And just this type of game. So, I mean, I think if you're Steve Kerr, you're pretty much hoping that these guys can relieve some minutes, so your top guns can get a break, and they don't have to be number one all the time. Steph Curry doesn't have to be the guy all the time, and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. So you definitely need your bench. But once again, the Warriors bench is not that good, right? Mm-hmm. They're not that good right now. They're not like the bench they had in the past. So it's going to be a tall task for those guys to step up and play at that level and make sure they win this game.
You know, we've seen teams go through stretches where they have difficulty shooting the three-pointer. You know, and I think to me, the one of the sort of more worrisome signs in that, I don't even know if I'd call it a sign, but one of the more worrisome aspects of that Game 5 loss, and again, it was just by 1 point, but the Raptors missed an awful lot of wide-open threes. I think NBA.com has them as three for 18. The Warriors were 9 for 17. Do coaches do anything to prevent that from becoming, at this stage of the year, do anything to prevent that from becoming a trend? Like, how do you go about addressing a team after they've had a poor game shooting? Will the players do extra work? Will it be video? Will guys look at video of their shots, Alvin? How will that go about being addressed?
I guess individually you may look at your shots and see how you're feeling. But as a coach, you know, you're happy with getting those shots. You mm-hmm. know, are you setting up plays? Are the players making the extra pass to get good shots? Because ultimately, if you're an NBA player and you can shoot, if you get enough open looks and you get good shots in rhythm, you're going to start making those shots. And I think, you know, there's a lot to make of the three-point shot. But if you look at it, like you mentioned the stats, the Warriors, they shot well from three, and the Raptors still had an opportunity to win that game. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it comes down to how do you execute at the right time of the game? You know, how do you get stops on defense at the right time of the game and give yourself a chance to win? Now, naturally, you want to make the three-point shots, but at the end of the day, it's not all about making those three-point shots. It's if you can get them on a consistent basis, and are you doing the right things offensively to make sure you're getting those type of looks? Because, like I said, you'll eventually start making them at some point.
No, that is a really good point. If you're a coach, and it's kind of part of the process thing, you trust that the players will make the shots, and if they are getting the shots, that indicates that there's nothing wrong with the system or anything like that, or nothing wrong with the tactics. It's just guys have a night where their shot isn't going. And, you know, yep. At this point in the season, if you're a head coach, it's pretty easy to put your faith in guys, isn't it? Because everybody's done it for you all year, you know?
Yeah, you have to, right? You can't second guess now, right? And Nick Nurse has done a great job of pretty much, you know, outright not second guessing, because there's been some times where guys been in a slump, whether it was Freddie and, you know, Danny and, you know, it happens. You know, Kyle's had games where it wasn't that good. So, you know, he stayed with those guys, and he believed in them. And those guys, to their credit, they bounced back tremendously and helped the Raptors win, you know, big games and big series. So, you know, that's what you have to do now. You have to believe in your guys. You have to trust the work that you put in, and then let the chips fall where they may and see what happens.
Alvin, as a former player, how did you view the situation around Kevin Durant and, you know, the decision for him to play? And, you know, we talked to Ben Rohrbach of Yahoo Sports, and we were just talking about how, you know, not having Kevin Durant, obviously it has a big impact in this series. But, you know, he was talking about what it means to the NBA to not have Kevin Durant for a full season. And, you know, not just what it means to other free agents and teams' plans and all that, but you've basically taken away one of your cornerstones, one of your great personalities, one of your great players out of the game. I know, Alvin, that we don't know all the details, but look, you've played a long time. You probably had to make a call yourself as to, man, do I go tonight? Like, you know, how did you view that situation with Kevin Durant?
No, very unfortunate. I felt bad that he got hurt, you know, because I know he was out there trying to help his team. You know, I know this is a moment where, as a kid, you dream about. And for his talent and for what he's done for this team already, you know, he knows that team need him. He watched his other teammates play through injuries, so that could have been additional pressure. But, you know, it's just unfortunate. At the end of the day, you have to make those decisions, and injuries are part of this game. So you just hope that he had all the information going into this situation, whether it's, you know, you could damage yourself or you're not 100% or maybe you shouldn't play, whatever the case may be. As long as he was informed fully by the organization and he made a decision because of he made decision and not any pressure, hey, it just happens sometimes. You know, like I said, it's unfortunate. But I know that feeling when you want to get out there and you want to play for your team and you want to play because you love the game so much and you think you can go through it. But like I said, it's just an unfortunate situation.
When something like that happens, you know, it happens in the game, and, you know, it's distracting to the players. The Warriors were very emotional about it. But you still have the game to play, right? So there's that thing in front of you that you got to focus on, and as a professional, you do that. Now you're on the plane going back to Oakland, and it kind of settles in. How much of a challenge is this going to be for Steve Kerr? You know, it's one thing to say that, well, we haven't had Kevin Durant all series, but another thing to go, yeah, you know, Kevin Durant's done for this series. Like, there's a finality there that you know, there's a reality to the situation. What is Steve Kerr's job going to be today with these guys? Is he going to have to get them to refocus? Or, Alvin, do you think because these guys have been through so much that it's not going to come easily, but it's something that they will be able to address?
Yeah, I think it's Steve Kerr. I think, you know, you have your team refocus and just play the game and worry about that. You know, there's a lot of talk behind if the organization is in for blame and things like that. So that can become distracting. But if you're a coach, if I'm Steve Kerr, I would use as much as I could this situation as motivation for my team, as inspiration for my team. You know, tell them that Kevin Durant, you know, put his career on the line. You know, you had a teammate, you had your brother, put his career on the line. And, you know, we're going to go out in honor of Kevin Durant and your teammate, and we're going to play like it really means something. You know, I could put that spin on it and make them understand, because they know they've been in that locker room. They've seen them in training. They've seen them trying to get back. So they know what that feeling is about. They know the sacrifice. So if I'm if I'm Steve Kerr, I'll just put that out there and make sure they understand the importance of this game and the importance of the magnitude of the situation, and make sure they don't really pay attention to the whispers about what the organ, who's at fault. So I get them to refocus, I get them rejuvenated, and I get them to just go out and play basketball.
All right, I'm going to ask you a very simple question. One thing that needs to happen for the Warriors to extend this series, one thing that absolutely has to happen for the Raptors to put the finishing touches on this.
I think the Warriors just have to go out, you know, it's easy to say it, but just go out there and play and you know, really – hopefully they can make their shots. Hopefully they can execute. And, you know, one of those guys, when I'm talking about one of those guys is Klay Thompson or Steph Curry, have an explosion of a game, right? Mm-hmm. And they just have one of those type of games. But from the Raptors, you know, I'm trying to limit those guys to get those games. And the Raptors are going to have to understand this is going to be the closeout games are always the toughest, because one team is fighting for their life. So you have to do everything. You have to be smart. You have to be patient. And you just have to be who the Raptors are. And I think that's why they are where they are today, because of the way they are, their composure, their poise, and, you know, their demeanor and how they approach the game. So I think they just stay steady, and they play, they execute, and don't allow the Warriors to do anything. You know, everything's going to be tough. Everything's going to be physical, you know, if you're going to beat the Raptors. You have to play like that. So I just think in order for the Warriors to win, the Raptors are going to have to help them win, because I just don't think the Warriors have enough to beat this Raptors team.
Alvin, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. Enjoy game 6 and safe travels, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Alvin Williams is our Basketball Central analyst on Sportsnet. And again, Sportsnet will have you covered all day long. We'll have the game tomorrow at 9 p.m. on 680 News, joining it in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Also want to remind you, today is NBA Finals Media Availability Day, and you can catch it on sportsnet.ca and on Sportsnet's YouTube channel. And coverage will start at 3:30 Eastern with Daniel Michaud and Faisal Kamisa. And again, that's at 3:30 p.m. NBA Finals Media Availability. You can catch it live on sportsnet.ca and on our YouTube channel. We'll have all the interviews with Steve Kerr and Nick Nurse, and the player interviews from the podium as well. It is the NBA media availability before game 6, which goes tomorrow at Oracle Arena. It will be the final game at Oracle Arena one way or the other. And you know, and I think Alvin's right. I mean, at this point, I think the only way Golden State wins is if the Raptors help them win. And I would suggest, you know, as Raptors fans are kind of sort of wondering what to, you know, to pin their hopes on. I would just say, just look at, you know, look at this team this year and look at its ability to go about its business. And look back and realize that you could have won game five. Like, you know, people look at it and go, game five, missed opportunity, they could have won it. Well, yeah, it's a missed opportunity because you would have wrapped up the series. But again, you had a chance to win the series after an odd game in which you didn't play particularly well at times. Kawhi Leonard took over the game in the fourth quarter. Like there was way more good out of that game if you were a Raptors fan. Way more good out of that game than bad. And bottom line is, and I keep getting back to this, we've got to say this. The Warriors don't have as much talent as the Raptors. It's closer with KD, but I still think, and I admit I did not think this at the start of the series, I'm putting my hand up, but even with KD, on balance, the Raptors, I think, have more skill, more ability, more talent than the Warriors, even with KD. Without KD, the gap is insurmountable. But even with him, I believe the Raptors, on balance, have more talent than the Golden State Warriors. Sopan Deb is a national basketball writer with the New York Times. He's been covering the series. We talked a little bit with Ben Rohrbach, the NBA writer at Yahoo Sports, about the impact on the offseason that Kevin Durant's injury may have. Kevin Durant, of course, an opportunity to exercise a one-year player option with Golden State for, I think it's $31.5 million, or go the free agent route. Kevin Durant is... I still am not entirely convinced that somebody wouldn't give him a max contract and just say, you know what, the hell with the first year. We understand he's hurt. We'll get him in. We'll rehab him. It still wouldn't surprise me if somebody would give him a max contract, given the money in the NBA, given the realities of the salary cap, and you know, given just how good a player Kevin Durant is. But the injury has already had a profound impact on the offseason. You already hear people talking about how other teams talking about how it's affected their planning, other agents, other players. And as I said with Ben Rohrbach, you know, if I'm an NBA executive and if I was on the fence about Kawhi Leonard or not at all interested in Kawhi Leonard, I'm certainly, based on what I've seen in this postseason, I'm certainly at least making a call. Like, there's nothing you can do. If Kawhi decides he wants to go to L.A. and leave money on the table in Toronto, there's nothing you can do about that if you're another NBA GM. But my goodness, if based on what you've seen in these playoffs, I mean, if you are, and I understand there are different players in different positions, but come on, if you've had any interest in Kevin Durant or any interest even in getting involved in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes or Kyrie Irving, my God, you've got to at least be making a call about Kawhi, don't you? If you're Boston or Golden State, whoever, you've got to at least be making a call. I'm sorry, not Golden State, Boston or Brooklyn. You have to be making a call about Kawhi. I mean, if you're the Knicks, you've got to be making a call about Kawhi, whether or not you have a chance of getting him. Based on what you've seen in the playoffs, I would think not at least kicking the tires on Kawhi Leonard is tantamount to gross negligence on the part of an NBA general manager. Sopan Deb, as we mentioned, is a national basketball writer at the New York Times. I'll pose that question to him, and we'll look ahead to Game 6 as well. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah, it's a podcast, but we're still not going to let him swear. Subscribe to Tim and Sid at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Crush a bit, little bit, roll it up, take a hit, feeling lit, feeling right, 2 a.m. summer night, I don't care, hand on the wheel, driving drunk, I'm doing my thing, rolling the mid beside him now, living my life, getting out dreams, people told me slow my roll, I'm screaming out that I'ma do just what I want, looking ahead, no turning back, if I fall, if I die, know I lived it to the fullest, if I fall.
now. If I die, know I lived in missing bullets. I'm on the pursuit of happiness, and I know everything will shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Hockey Central at noon is just around the corner because it's almost noon. It's funny how that works out. A reminder, Baseball Central will be back once the Raptors finish winning the NBA series. So let's just say, for example, the Raptors win tomorrow, which they're going to do. There will be no Baseball Central on Friday. I would imagine there wouldn't be one on Monday. And we don't know that for sure, but we can figure it out from there at Baseball Central. Baseball Central will be back next week. How about that? And yes, Barker's fine. Travis has been talking to Barker. He won't talk to me because he thinks it's bad luck to talk to me. But anyhow, but we do have a pair of tickets to give away to see the Jays and the Los Angeles Angels on Monday night, which also happens to be the Sportsnet Jays Care broadcast auction, presented by our friends at TD, by the way. This is our walk-off Wednesday promotion where we're giving you a chance to win Blue Jays tickets every Wednesday. All you have to do is be the eighth caller through at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, eighth caller through. If you can tell us the name of this week's Blue Jay, which we gave out earlier, if you can tell us the name of this week's Blue Jay, and all I'll tell you is it'll be a relief to you and a relief to us if you know his name. If you can give out the name of this week's Blue Jay and are the eighth caller through, we will send you to see the Jays and the Los Angeles Angels on Monday night. So you get to see Shohei Ohtani and Albert Pujols as the Jays return home from their road trip to take on the Los Angeles Angels. Again, we do this every Wednesday. It is our walk-off Wednesday promotion. And for further contest details, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and for all your sports needs, go to sportsnet.ca/590. We will have Game 6 of the NBA Final tomorrow night. It'll be on 680 News. We will join it in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan right after the conclusion of the Blue Jays and Orioles game. Of course, the Toronto Blue Jays and the Toronto Raptors and their fans putting the celebration on hold. They 1-point loss to Golden State in Game 5. Toronto had the ball in their hands. Kyle Lowry had the final shot. Kyle Lowry didn't make the final shot. Credit Draymond Green with some good defense. As a result, we are going back to Oakland for Game 6 tomorrow night. We talked a little bit with Ben Rohrbach, NBA writer with Yahoo Sports, about Kevin Durant's injury and the implications for the NBA offseason. This injury, I would imagine, probably, other than the reaction in Toronto, which I think we've covered in detail, and the reaction in Oakland, the reaction with Golden State fans, which we've covered in detail, I think maybe the place where the Kevin Durant injury, pardon the pun, would be felt the most is in New York, because I think a lot of Knicks fans, may already have had Kevin Durant in a Knicks jersey. We know the situation with Kevin Durant. It's an Achilles injury. If the severity is everything everybody says it's going to be, he will not be playing next season. He does have a option for 1 year and $31.5 million left, an option in his contract with the Golden State Warriors. Of course, a lot of people thought he would decline that option and would seek a max contract elsewhere in the offseason. And elsewhere, in the mind of most people, meant New York, where he would go join the Knicks and kind of become the personality, the player that kickstarts that rebuilding program. So the injury was felt in New York as much as any place else. Sopan Deb is a national basketball writer with the New York Times, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So, Pan, I'll talk to you about the series in a minute, but I did want to get sort of your analysis, your take of what the Durant injury means to the Knicks and what it means in general to the NBA offseason.
For having me. Well, I want to start by saying we hadn't heard anything officially on whether Durant is playing next year or not.
True.
And so, you know, so until we know that, it's tough to kind of gauge that because, look, who knows? Maybe, you know, and I understand that it's unlikely, but maybe the injury is not as bad as it looks. It's not as bad as chatter coming out of the game. So a lot of this depends on that. Let's take your hypothetical and say that he misses all of next season. It certainly creates a lot of interesting scenarios, right? Because Kevin Durant can opt in for another year in Golden State. And think about what the ripple effects of that would be, right? So let's say Kevin Durant opts in. Well, then what does Kyrie Irving do? Does that mean that Kyrie Irving, you know, says, okay, well, you know what? Maybe Boston is my best situation then. You know, what is, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, Kemba Walker, and all these other, you know, prospect free agents say? It really does create a huge ripple effect. And a whole bunch of teams who cleared out one, two, and I think in at least one or two cases, a little bit more than two, you know, they will have a decision to make. And who has the option of, let's say, signing Kevin Durant to a long-term deal and just sacrificing a year of that mm-hmm. to hope that maybe when he comes back the year after that he plays on the wrong side of 30, by the way, that he plays at the same high level he was playing at when he's a top five player in the last couple of years. So it certainly creates a lot of interesting questions going into the offseason. But it should be noted that it's possible the injury is not as bad as – it looks unlikely, but we don't know that yet.
Right. There's and there is generally there's the tendency when you see an injury like that, especially given his situation, is almost immediately to assume the worst. You know, it certainly looked bad, but you're right. We do need to wait and see the final diagnosis of the injury and the prognosis for his return. And one of the other aspects of this injury that kind of intrigues me through the off season as well is, again, if we assume that he is not going to either play next year or he's going to be hobbled in some way, and he's so panicked, if I'm a team in the West, I'm going, okay, wait a minute, you're telling me that Golden State won't have Kevin Durant? Like, this, the implications of this for other teams in the West as well and how it may change their mindset, they're huge. I mean, if I'm the Lakers or the Clippers, I might say, you know what, let's put the pedal to the metal here. Because Golden State without Kevin Durant, and maybe, you know, maybe without the ability to replace him if he opts in, that's going to make the West even more open.
I totally agree, although I would note, I think those teams that you just mentioned, particularly the Lakers and Clippers, they're going pedal to the metal regardless mm-hmm. of whether, you know, Kevin Durant is able to play or not. So, like, you know, look, the Lakers have LeBron James in his mid-30s. That window is not as big as, you know, other windows. So they have to put talent around LeBron James right now. They have to make the move, whatever, whether regardless of what the Warriors are doing, they have to go in right now. The Clippers have a little bit more time, you know, right, because they have a lot of young pieces. It's not like they have, like, a max guy in their early to mid-30s to look at, right? But those teams you mentioned, look, if there's one thing we're seeing from the Warriors right now is that in their run of championships, this is the most vulnerable they've ever been. So I think you're right. You're going to definitely see a lot of these West Coast teams like the Nuggets. You know, you might see more risky trades. You might see more, as you called it, pedal to the metal. Yeah, I think you'll definitely see that because the West is more wide open than I think we've seen in recent years. And the team to really watch out for is Houston because they have Daryl Morey, and Daryl Morey has not shown any hesitancy to make kind of swing for the fences trades when it suits his team.
Do you think that Kawhi Leonard's performance this postseason, the fact that he stayed, as far as we know, stayed relatively healthy this postseason, does that maybe widen his market in the offseason? Because most people, I think, just assumed it was going to be the Clippers or the Raptors, and that may still be the case. But, you know, like I, after watching this series, Sopan, if I'm a GM, I've got at least I have to make a call to his agent, don't I? I have to at least make a call.
Well, I will disagree with you, and I think his Kawhi Leonard's market is as wide as he wants it to be or as narrow as he wants it to be. Mm-hmm. And that's always been the case. Kawhi Leonard, I mean, he had the best year of his career this year. So even if you take away the postseason run, he had the best year of his career. And so I think, you know, yes, of course, the Knicks and Nets, all these teams would love to have Kawhi Leonard. It's just a question of, will Leonard take meetings with them? But I will tell you, here I think is what will be the lasting impact of Kawhi Leonard's season. He played 60 games. Okay. The Raptors went hard on load management and keeping him fresh for the playoffs. And look at the results. The NBA season is really long. And the Warriors in particular, they look gassed at mm-hmm. this point. Whereas Kawhi Leonard, you know, he can now in the Eastern Conference Finals play 52 minutes in a game. Right? So I think the lasting effect of Kawhi Leonard's season is not going to be in free agency because he's going to be wanted by every team anyway. The lasting effect is that next year you're going to see a lot of teams resting their best players way more than they did in previous years. You might see LeBron, you know, assuming the Lakers can, you know, hang in there, you might see LeBron, like, do you expect LeBron to play more than 50, 60 games next year? Because if I'm the Lakers, I wouldn't put him out there for that amount of time. Same thing for Steph Curry and the Warriors or maybe Jokic in Denver. You're going to see a lot more players resting because of how well Kawhi Leonard has held up in the postseason, and partially for reasons like, you know, the Kevin Durant injury.
Mm-hmm. Man, and Adam Silver just broke out in a cold sweat when you said that, explaining to his fans.
Well, you know,
that...
funny. Well, you know, Silver actually, you know, he actually gave a talk in D.C. recently, you know, doing a Q&A with the, I think it's called the Economist Club or something down there, and he was asked about this. And look, this is what he said, you know, maybe the NBA season needs to be shortened, you know. Mm-hmm. He said as of right now, the Stars are playing most games and the Kawhi Leonard situation was unusual. But I don't think it'll be unusual next year. And so it's just a question, of whether the season will be shortened. And he expressed some openness to it. I mean, of course, that'll mean a decline of revenue that owners will have to sign off on. But, you know, I think you're going to see those discussions really heat up over the next couple of years.
All right, let's shift focus back to the NBA Finals. What does Steve Kerr – how do you think Steve Kerr goes about handling this situation? Because, okay, he's only had Kevin Durant effectively for one quarter, but they looked really good with Kevin Durant in that one quarter. Now he's got to go back to sort of making it work with the, you know, Boogie or Quinn yeah. Cook. How do you see him coaching? Or at this point, do you just say, guys, you lose, we're out. Go get him.
I mean, what choice does he have, right? Because mm-hmm. it's not just Kevin Durant. I mean, there's a chance Kevin Looney doesn't play.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't have many options to turn to other than give Steph Curry the ball, give Klay Thompson the ball, and hope for the best, mm-hmm. right? And hope that when Jordan Bell is out there and Quinn Cook and Jonas Jerebko and some of these other players who would Aaron McKinney, who probably not get minutes, you know, if the Warriors were healthy, he's got to go out there and just pray, essentially. Mm-hmm. I think the key, I mean, look, what DeMarcus Cousins are you getting? Are you getting DeMarcus Cousins of games 2 and games 5 where he's being a bulldozer down low, he's hitting buckets, he's getting rebounds, he's not making terrible decisions? Or are you getting DeMarcus Cousins you got in the other parts of the finals where he is driving into triple teams, turning the ball over, missing bunnies at the at the basket? Which DeMarcus Cousins are you getting? Because that will be the difference between a win or a loss for Golden State. Because Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they can each score 30, 40 points, and it still might not be enough to beat the Raptors. Look, even in the loss in Game 5, the Raptors had a balanced attack. They had, I think, like 4 or 5 players that scored 10 points.
Yep.
At the end of the day, right now, the Raptors are a deeper team right now than the Warriors are. So that means you need players that don't normally contribute or that are hobbled right now. They need to give more than what's expected of them. And that's a coin flip, right? Either Quinn Cook hits his open jumpers or he doesn't, you know? And that could happen. I don't know. But what can Steve Kerr do other than roll the lineups out there that he can and hope for the best? I think Steph Curry's going to have to play every minute. I think Klay Thompson's going to have to play every minute, you know, and do they have the juice in the tank to make that happen? I don't know. I mean, one option Steve Kerr does not have is to play Steph Curry off the ball. You know, that's something he was doing early in the series. Kevin Durant, you know, gives him the flexibility to play Steph Curry off the ball a little bit more. He does not have that option anymore.
Right. So, Pan, we appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So, Pan Deb is a national basketball writer with the New York Times. And again, game six tomorrow night, we will have it on 680 News. We will join it in progress on Sportsnet 590 The Fan immediately following the Blue Jays-Orioles game. We have a winner for Walk-Off Wednesday, Joe Fowler in Port Colborne. You have won a pair of tickets to Monday night's game between the Los Angeles Angels and the Blue Jays as part of our Walk-Off Wednesday promotion. Shohei Ohtani, Albert Pujols. You can tell, right? I'm mentioning the names of the visiting players. We've never had to do that before. Anyhow, you get a chance to see the Jays and the Angels Monday. If the weather's good, the dome's going to be open. So there you go. How bad can it possibly be? That's it for the Blair Show today. Hockey Central at noon is next. Don't forget, Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals, is tonight. Blues and Bruins, 8 o'clock on CBC and Sportsnet Ontario. Hockey Central's pregame is at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. The St. Louis Blues and the Boston Bruins, Game 7. The first Game 7, Finals Game 7, the Bruins have hosted at home. The St. Louis Blues looking to win their first ever Stanley Cup. We'll have all you need to know about that tomorrow. And, of course, we will have you covered ahead of the Raptors game all day long. That's it for the Blair Show. Have a great day.